just enjoying being on that side of the street. And now it's my turn. Okay, welcome everybody. Thank you for inviting me to present. I have nothing to disclose. I don't have the slide there, but I have no interest, commercial, industrial interest with anybody involved in this research. I'm going to present. My name is Annie Villadridge. I'm a medical anthropologist. I work with a team at the Immigration and Health Initiative at Hunter College of the City University of New York. So I want to acknowledge my team members who were very active in conducting this research. And I'm saying I'm a medical anthropologist because I'm going to show you how actually nutritionists, epidemiologists, physical active experts, activity experts can work with anthropologists, you know. And so to make a long story short, I only have 15 minutes. We conducted 6 focus groups with Latinas in New York, Latinas defined in the many different ways in which we define a population that is very diverse in terms of cultural identity, nationality, socioeconomic status, etc. But because this was a focus group exploratory research, we used this as an opportunity to address many different related issues that affect Latinas. Issues of body image, the part of obesity image being gordita, voluptuous versus being thin, was presented last year at the APHA. And one piece that I'm presenting today is related to group questions addressing Latinas' food preferences in both the countries of origin and in the U.S. I'm very sick, so I'm going to make a big effort to make sure that you can understand my English and my voice. But this morning, I couldn't even speak in the early in the morning, so I'm really struggling right now. And we wanted to understand how the issue of food relates to eating behaviors and weight control issues. All of these are so intertwined with each other, so we made an effort trying to distinguish them and helping women also to see how these issues affect their eating patterns and their body satisfaction and weight status. Make a story short, when it comes to the focus of today's talks, we know that there is a pattern out there with immigrants in general and Latinas in particular in the literature that says that Latinas tend to be thinner and healthy, the healthy Latina paradox, and through time, through what we call selective acculturation, different ways of talking about similar issues, we know that immigrants in general, but Latinas in particular, tend to become more overweight and getting into closer to whites in terms of unhealthy patterns. As we also know that women gain more weight, Latina women in general, please forgive me as an anthropologist, I shouldn't say Latinas, I should be more specific, but we also know that these patterns exist. So during the interviews, the focus groups interviews, some of the issues that came up over and over about and I like the saying that the two presenters research really complements my presentation is the idea of the nostalgia, the relationship between what we eat here vis-a-vis what we ate in our country of origins and the transnational relationship, to what extent we keep those ethnic foods or those ethnic foods change for the good or for the worse. And so our working hypothesis was that while some aspects of traditional Latinos' diet may be protective against obesity and chronic disease, the idea of eating fresh vegetables that you grow in the backyard, other patterns actually may be harmful, including eating an excess of fried foods such as chickens and plantain. The literature on nostalgic food is quite recent in the public health field. But if you go as an anthropologist, where I go to diasporic and migration studies and I look at what my cultural anthropologist friends do, when I look at ethnic studies, it's a lot out there about the why food is important for immigrants. One of my famous colleagues, Donna Gabacha, wrote one famous book called The Food We Eat, how immigrants relate to food as a way of acknowledging national identity, belonging to a group of similarities, and the field of anthropology of food is a big subfield within my discipline. So I was a little bit shocked when I actually realized that the term nostalgic food, as you can see on the very top of my slide, actually has been bought by the food industry. This logo is actually one of the companies that sells nostalgic foods to us. I'm an immigrant from Argentina. I buy nostalgic foods. So you see, the food industry, and I will say the pharmaceutical industry, I will say corporations, are always a step ahead of us. They are writing about nostalgic food. They are selling us nostalgic food. They know what Latino wants, or they create an audience, as my colleague Arlene Davila will say. They create, they shape the Latino consumer, okay? So here we are, the public health or semi-anthropologists trying to understand to what extent this nostalgic food industry is getting to them, is shaping them, and actually to what extent Latinos are resisting what we call resilient cultural items. This is a little bit about the sample. As you can tell, 70% was foreign-born, so we here in this sample, we have a little bit of this fight between those who are immigrants, who came with those items from home, nostalgic items and cultural habits, and those who are second generations. So the second generations are getting a little bit of a different story. I'm going to run a little bit through the main, what we do in focus groups, rather than counting who say yes or who say no, we do what we call cultural domain items. We try to understand what are the commonalities, the consensus around certain topics, and we try to understand what are the dissonant topics, what are the aspects that actually make a group differ with each other. So I'm going to rush. These are some of the quotes for you to get an idea of the domain aspects. One is the construction of nostalgia. Women during the focus group were talking about romanticizing the food they grow in the backyard. Back home we fish. I mean, it's almost like going back to Rousseau natural man, you know, in the pre-industrial society. We had the here versus there. The discourse of here, you know, is expensive, the hormones in the chicken. Back there we can be thinner because we eat less hormones, etc. And we have also what my colleagues have already discussed, the generational challenges. The kids here don't want, this is in Spanish, just to get you a sense that in Spanish women were telling me, the kids here don't want to eat the food, our food, nuestra comida. They want to eat the McDonald's and the chickens, and so we give them, we need education to know how we can transform our own food into the taste of the American industry. And then the issue of comfort foods, guys. It's a big item for those all of us who are interested in helping to prevent obesity among minorities in general. Comfort food relates to the idea of anti-stress mechanism depending on food as a way of coping resources. So unless we start looking at comfort foods, not like something from abroad or something that we do in America, also that people from minority groups take as part of the cultural baggage, in other words, nostalgic foods, as part of the comfort food agenda. We need to address that. And then, the idea is to gain weight is cheaper and to lose gain is very expensive. Why we're eating badly here in this country? Because we cannot afford the healthy food we ate back home. And I'm going back, I'm doing everything wrong. You see, this is what happens when you have a fever. The mystifying nostalgia. You have the other discourse which says, hey, wait a minute. It's not true that we eat better in our communities. This acknowledgement that actually what happens is we are retaining as a community the bad nostalgic food, as they call it, and we are leaving behind the good nostalgic food. We are leaving behind the mango, the fruits, the salads, and we are making our cultural baggage here. As part of the cultural baggage, we are making all this heavy, you know, food, very high in fat content. And some of these women will say, life is like, if food is comforting to you, you're going to overdo it. So we need to work on why we're doing this. Why I'm going back? Here it is. Reinventing nostalgic food. This is another theme in the cultural domain of women in these groups. They're saying, okay, we're doing something wrong. You see, we saw nostalgia, demystifying nostalgia, and then, okay, what can we do? Women give you ideas, guys. We need to go back to people and ask them what they should be doing. Finding substitutes is a big thing. It's not as the woman that you see on the line pan. It's not giving up what you eat. It's just changing the way you eat. They tell us. They tell us, professionals, what we should be doing to help them out. The physical environment, guys, we need to work in ecological levels, perspectives. All of them talk about not having safe neighborhoods, not having supermarkets. So to make a long story short and get into the findings, they all combine, in spite of these different themes, pro-nostalgic, again nostalgic, they take into consideration that they eat high-caloric foods and they try to counterbalance with fruits and vegetables. To a certain extent, the migration process strengthens the first and weakens the second. The replacement of healthy choices for comfort foods, cheap food become an anti-stress coping mechanisms. The difficulty is to keep up with healthy eating because they are not doing physical activity. They lack time. The idea of a meal, a shared situation with others, is lost in the United States. They all say they just swallow the food and go back to work. Transnational nostalgia, guys. We need to work more in a transnational global framework. People go back and they maintain living relationship with those at home, and food connects people back. People bring nostalgic food from home. And this is to show you. This is me in Little Argentina in New York, where I go to get my nostalgic food products. So I'm part, as a good anthropology, I preach of the things with which I'm connected to. And this is what happens. I'm a vegetarian. I'm the only Argentinian vegetarian. This is before eating an asado, what we call Argentinian barbecue, on the left. The dessert, as you can see, is all high food in protein, high in proteins and fat, and an after. I mean, eating this food means being with others from your own ethnic community and sharing experience and getting a sense of love and affection with others. Implications and future directions. We need to start creating messages that acknowledge the role of nostalgic foods. We need to promote healthy ethnic nostalgia. We need more research that addresses Latina generational and cultural differences. So the next two projects that we're going to start next year is about first-generation Latinas and second-generation Latinas, an issue that we didn't consider in this study. So we need to distinguish that. And keeping into account ecological models, marketing of healthy ethnic food, programs like Healthy Bodegas initiatives and green cards in New York are great. Helping women find substitutes and learning to ask. Unless we ask people what they need and what they want, we're all going to miss the train. Thank you so much for your attention, and I'm looking forward to your questions. This is our website if you're interested in our publications and current projects. Thank you.